Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
All full of bodhisattvas. I'm still loving the way this room feels like a mandala. You know, it just does. There's this sort of outer container and and the inner layer and all of you lighting up the inside. A mandala of freedom and transformation. So tonight I'd like to continue exploring this one sentence we've been carrying with us and in us and speaking to and listening to. And although I wouldn't claim to know exactly why it spoke to me so convincingly way back when we were thinking about this retreat, but I think it has to do with the thick weave of this time and the way this time that we're in is doing such a good job of dissolving our frameworks of understanding, which after all is sort of what we asked for in Zen. It's like, ooh, we're getting what we asked for in large doses. This will undo our concepts for us. And so a bright road, the bright road, the bright road that the ancestors knew, this particular thought goes, is right here before you, right here in front of you, and everything you see and hear. So I'm loving it that we have the leisure to to meet this, thank you, at different levels. You know, because when we meet a koan or an expression like this that is designed to bring about an experience for us, we meet it at so many different levels. And I think Andrew was speaking to this, and we'll continue to look at it, that, you know, we have the level of our memories. We have the level of our sense experience. And then as we sort of wiggle our way through the levels at which we meet something like this, we also then sort of fall through layers to a place where all of that kind of loses its articulation, loses its clear command of us, and we're just there with, we're just in a large space with this. So I'm going to begin a little bit with associations, you know, so sort of a sensory layer and memory layer, image layer, that were present for me, and then wiggle down, hopefully, to some sense of the space of meditation and the space of our post-retreat practice in which we can activate this and let it activate us. So, you know, the images that came up for me with the bright road were amusing to me because they were like Milky Way, you know, when you get in a dark enough place and see how much the Milky Way is a road, yeah, and the moon path on water. That's all reflection, but you never get a whole moon, you know, reflection. It's all light, and it's that shimmering that's both bright and dark, and unstopping. But it goes all the way from there to here, and yet it sort of has no there and no here. It's just enchanting, and you can get lost in it. As you can if you lie down and take in the Milky Way. And then the more daytime image of a bright path in the forest that takes its beauty from the darkness around it. Yeah? And it doesn't matter where it's going. It's not about where it's going at all. It's the allure of the path itself, of its lightness in the shadows, in the darkness. And to me, the beauty of these paths is in the light against dark. And this also brought to mind the passage in Acequias and Gates that Percy has spoken recently about the painter Vermeer, and the way that after a long time of war and difficulty, he painted light against dark. She didn't talk about that as much, but if you look at the paintings, they are light and dark together in ordinary scenes in such a way as to bring about the presence of peace, to allow us to remember, to reimagine, to believe again in the presence of peace, in the possibility of peace for us. And so that connection of beauty and revealing was very much there too. So the ancestors knew, that the ancestors knew, brought me with some other associations. And so one of them was back again to Ma and Shito, those ancestors we speak of fairly often from the time of the decline of the Tang dynasty, when there was catastrophe, where, you know, within 10 years, 2/3 of the population died, and there was chaos and difficulty, death and hardship. And Ma, who traveled around for 20 years witnessing, and Shito, who felt urgently the need for ways to freedom within the exact circumstances. So what were these ways to freedom? So Ma, who knew intimately the level of difficulty, the terrain of difficulty, you know, when asked what was the essence of his school, said, some of you could just recite this out loud, "It's just the place where you let go of your body and your life." Well, that's a kind of freedom, huh? Freedom not to be protecting anything. Freedom, yeah? So all of your energy available, none of it tied up in protecting. It's one way to look at that. That's the association that comes up now. And then Shoto saying, this will sound a little like a resonance, what meets the eye is the way. Here's our bright road again, yeah? And what did they know? What was this knowing? The bright road that the ancestors knew. What was this knowing? And I think that one thing I want to bring into our musings tonight is that this knowing is not so much knowing of a thing, the way we think we know a thing, yeah? But more as we would think of, in a way, knowing how, maybe not even, a kind of knowing the way you know the feeling of someone's hand that you love, with whom you've taken long walks. So maybe not so much about the, like, okay, this a belief. This is what Buddha nature is. I know. Not that kind of knowing so much. But what is Buddha nature like in action? What's the action of light? What's the action of our true heart and mind? So then what's a road if we're thinking action rather than thing? Yeah? And I was thinking about musicians who talk about the road as a life more than a place, right? So there's that kind of that sense of the road. Yeah. In action. And the other thing that was notable about this shift that came about with Ma and Chateau was that it was not about just looking inward to find your true self. That was the way that people were practicing before they came along, that they felt found inadequate. And we often, I think, still turn to that because it's around a lot. You know, just, and in fact our sutra, just turn the light inward and witness your own nature, right? But what is that light and what is that inward? If we think that we're just needing to sort of somehow examine our innards, you know, like, what's down there, you know, then that's looking for a thing again, isn't it? And that's just as illusory as outward. If we're trying to find a thing, right? Let me pin it down. Let me see it. Let me get a clear look. Yeah. So what if that's not where we're stopping? Then we come to the realization that awakening happens in relationship. And that brings us back to our sentence. That in our meditation, where we fall into the vastness and we concentrate our energy, nonetheless, to bring something to fruition, for it to shine, to be luminous, for us to find the radiance of it, is relationship. Happens in relationship. And so we keep company, yeah? We keep company with our thoughts, with our sensations, and pretty soon we notice that there is not so much a distinction between the thought, the sensation, the owl's call, the buzzing plane, the rustling, the light breeze, hail suddenly. And we're free to fall into it and free to use it. So what about that? So here's a for instance that's a koan. Nanchuan offers Luzu a jewel. Luzu asked Nanchuan, "People don't recognize the wish-fulfilling gem. I picked it up myself in the Tathagata treasury. What is this treasury?" Nanchuan said, "It's me engaged in conversation with you like this." How, and then Luzu says, "Well, how about when there's no conversation?" Nanchuan says, "That's it too." "What's the jewel?" says Luzu, poor guy. "What's the jewel again? Show it to me." Nanchuan, "Reverend Luzu." Luzu says, "What, Reverend Luzu?"
"Yes."
"Yes?" And Nanchuan says, "Go on, you don't recognize what you are." "You missed it." It's bringing to mind that, you know, how sad that people go searching far away and, you know, miss what's right in front of them, right? Reverend Luzu. So, circling back a little bit, and that people, right, that's like all of us, right? It's what we do sometimes, and not always. So circling back to the road, the bright road, I was reminded of Bandelier. You know, there's a, what's it called? Not an annex, but, you know, there's a separate little part of Bandelier. I can't remember the name of it. That was a community on a hilltop. And to get there, you can walk up the path that the people use to, over the stone. And it's about like that deep, would you say? Yeah. And so you're walking in this path that is worn that deep into the stone by people's feet. And it's very moving to just, you know, just put your feet in this deep path of stone, worn by how many trips to water and back, right? To corn and back, beans and back, to the sacred spot and back. And those people are gone. So in a way, you're looking, you're not even looking at a road, are you? You're looking at a wonderful a relationship, really, of you are really touching relationship where you are somehow through stone touching people who are no more. But it's not a road as in a road to go somewhere, right? And so that's one way of knowing a road. But there is no road into the future. Yeah, the future is dark. We can't see it. There can't be a road there yet, because nobody's been there to lay it, right? And yet, we feel as if we're looking for a road into the future. So what about knowing that? What looks like a road is going to be an illusion, isn't it? Because it's going to be a map made by somebody who hasn't been there. Not all that trustworthy. And kind of it reminded me of your ditty, right? Mm-hmm. A road into the future is false in the same way that ditty gets less and less convincing. Mm-hmm. Yeah? So then, the next association that came up with me really was from Vimalakirti's room. In the Vimalakirti Sutra, there's a little section about what is it like, what are the characteristics of Vimalakirti's room. Vimalakirti, the enlightened layman, whose, 10-foot room holds 30,000 bodhisattvas. And what part of the description says it's always illuminated with golden light at all times, no matter what. That's just the way it is. Luminous, illuminated with golden light. So I was thinking about this bright road and noticed that I find myself feeling it that way, that kind of a brightness. That isn't necessarily sunlit or moonlit or in any other way sort of lit at. I have a tendency to hop and sort of leave people behind. So I want to connect the dots a little bit. If we're talking about a bright road that our ancestors knew, more like the way we know maybe a song or just the wisp of a tune, and a road that is not something laid out ahead for us, and yet most beautiful and alive. Alive like moon path on water. Maybe. So then, for some reason, I started thinking about the Eightfold Path. which most of you don't hear me talk about very often. Oh, what does that have to do with it? And so if you think of the Eightfold Path as a sort of magic, in that it has eight folds, and it's usually folded up. And that this is the Eightfold Path where we often gets described in terms of right view, right understanding, right action, right speech, right meditation, right livelihood. We think of that sort of, we can fall into thinking that sort of in terms of the rule book. But what if it's something more mysterious than that, and we think of it as something folded up, a road, maybe a bright road, that lies dormant. And that doesn't exist until there's an encounter. So do you see how I'm connecting with that? It happens in relationship. Huh. Then what is it with those that eight-folded? And I for some reason, I feel them as like flesh folds, you know, not paper folds. So like a critter, an eight-folded critter, maybe, folded up. What a fantastic, beasts of the southern wilds, what is it called? Fantastic, anyway, never mind. So... it is kind of like that, though. What's the name of that movie?
Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them.
And Where to Find Them, that's the one. Okay, so one of them is the Eightfold Path Beast.
I'm thinking it's a pug.
Probably. Plenty of folds.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So going back to our sentence again, the bright road that the ancestors knew. Is right here in everything you see and hear. In everything you see and hear. In every encounter. In every relationship. Because there are no things you see and hear. Right? There's only what happens here. There's only smooth, light reflecting, squiggles, words, reading it. Yeah? And then it's alive. Yeah? But if I try to just label a thing, an inert definition, it's cardboard, you know, it has no life. It hasn't happened yet. Yeah? So there's no happening except in relationship. And so what if then the bright road is in that, is in this. So folding back one more time, and I'm about to stop, folding back one more time to what I said about Ma and Shoto, that it's not about just getting some pretty picture of emptiness. Yeah? Or even of impermanence or interbeing. Because your pretty picture is nothing until activated. There is no road. Yeah? And when the brightness that is you meets the brightness that is you, you and you and this, then something is possible, and that's the road. Something is possible, and you make that road by walking. Yeah? And that shines from inside. That road goes. That's the road out of which that eight-folded pug is born. Yeah. And I was thinking of words besides bright, you know, because bright, it's a beautiful word. But to me, it didn't quite, it's flat. You know what I mean? Right. It feels like it has a flat surface to me for some reason. And I was thinking candescent, luminous, radiant. It's more like my experience of it. Yeah? That when there's you and there's me, when there's this and there's me, and there's just that meeting, and something can happen, something is happening. That's all it is happening. That's all we are is happening. That's candescent. It's lit from inside. And that has power for the way. That has power in our lives if we let it. If we can just let go long enough. Just open the hand a little bit. And so as we're sitting in this retreat, and as we walk from here, but especially for right now, as we're sitting in meditation, it's all encounter. It's all relationship. And if that freedom is really our deepest commitment, the freedom of all of us, if we are willing to offer ourselves body and life to genuine, usable, useful freedom for all of us, then we are already able to release the stuff that suddenly becomes pretty trivial and allow ourselves the actual encounter that we have, that luminous road, to come lighting, to light up to meet what's lighting up to meet us. We get to do that right here on our cushions. And yes, it takes courage, meeting everything equally. Yeah? Meeting everything with the same readiness. I meet you. I meet you. I meet you. I meet you. we have time for a little bit of conversation.
Sarah, I was thinking about when you were talking about relationships, something that struck me was all of a sudden it's not just relationship amongst people. Jay and I were at the Fine Arts Center before we came to the talk. So the relationships we have with art and beauty and expression and creativity. And the Soto Zen emphasis on doing something completely with full presence and full appreciation, respect and intimacy, whether it's an object or it's cleaning something, that's relationship too. And then the other thing that struck me was the light in Vimala Kirti's room, the golden. I love that incandescence that you finally brought it to. I thought about how people's faces transform and beautify it when they smile. They look like a totally different person. And that is a glowing an illumination and incandescence. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Or sometimes just when they are so much there. Yeah. When I went recently, you know, to try to help, and it was absolutely no help, but I'll find a way. But on this particular morning, I went to see if I could help with the moving, people having to move out of their encampment, homeless people. They were incandescent.
I was thinking of adding this last night, but in terms of saying everything you see and hear, which is really nice, but to me it's also everything that I think and what I feel, because that's more of an internal thing. But it also happens to be really present, especially in the meditation retreat. And all that stuff is the right road.
Heaven help us.
You know, it's like, okay. Pretty flowers are one thing. Incandescent faces are one thing. You know. But my mind is another. You know.
Yeah.
And to treat it like that, and to treat it like like the present, like the ancestor, you know, like just what is right now. And it's the same thing the ancestors encountered, right? Mm-hmm. Every
Absolutely.
Single one of them.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
It's the bright road.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting that the, yeah.
And what I mean is they had minds like mine.
Yeah.
They weren't like that much better than mine.
And so what's the light, you know? We tend to think of it in terms of we'll find it lit, right? It's something that we'll get, right? It'll be lit. And maybe not.
Well, Andrew did a great job last night of just like wiping out all the distinctions between the bright and the dark. You know?
Yeah.
And just like saying it's this swirling process, you know?
Yeah.
So, and we have this continual, you know, incantation of in the dark and broken roads, you know, in the dark. I forget, I can't remember all they go, you know, time after time, when will we be free from birth and death, dark road after dark road. Mm-hmm. So, those don't seem very lit.
No.
You right?
Yes.
like all wonderful places.
Right. So the radiance is in the encounter, is in the relationship. Yeah?
Yeah, I think the seeing is seeing it as a relationship instead of being stuck somewhere brightens things quite a bit for me.
Well, in my experience, it's something very real that arises in the relationship, in the happening. And so I'm sort of taking a... I'm sort of doing that. You'll probably notice this. I'm doing the. This is my experience of how it is, rather than.
You're wrong.
And not you're wrong.
No, I mean rather than that.
Oh.
Rather than this is the way it is.
Yeah, but also rather than, how about when it's like this? So I'm actually sort of coming out and saying, this is my experience of it. Yeah. Is that that the radiance is something that happens, that it is a bright road, in other words. And that but it's not a thing.
Yeah. And well, just, could you say a little more about how that happens in the dark and lonely road, how the radiance happens?
Yeah.
It happens all by itself.
Well, I think you did that one. I guess the example that comes to mind for me is two things. One is when we just are next to each other in the middle of what is. And the other is a more specific memory of when my brother died. And sitting there in the night, there was a moment, a long moment, when something that we could only call light that my sister and I both witnessed poured out of his body. Radiated. And we called it light because there was no other word for it. But it was a dark moment. You know, my brother got hit by a car. It was not a happy time.
Yeah.
And I don't have any way to explain that.
So just today, as we were having a little hard time managing the retreat in various aspects, and we were doing the sutra service, and our wonderful head of practice was crying during the sutra service. And he was crying at one point when he said, "On the dark and broken road."
Yeah.
And I was crying. And I was so grateful that Frank was crying because it allowed me to cry because we just had this hard day.
Yeah.
And there was hard stuff going on. And there's that relationship. Yeah.
Like that. So who else might like to speak to your own experience or objections, you know? Or... But what about what comes up?
I didn't understand the metaphor
quite all the way until you had brought up the Eightfold Path, which was a surprise because you don't bring that up often. And I never, strangely enough, never thought of it as a path or a road, because I think when I was earlier introduced to it, it's always pictorially shown as a wheel. And so I thought of it as being a path, but being presented as a wheel. And so it's like that saying where the rubber meets the road. And that kind of brought it together for me. I'm like, yeah, that's always it. That's that relationship. Or that meeting. And where we're always looking for, we're always after something. Well, that's where the nothing is. It's not that it's nothing, but it's no thing.
Yeah.
It's just, it sounds too dull to call it a process, but it's just there.
Yeah.
Where that rubber meets the road. And I didn't quite get the pug metaphor, because I have a pug.
Okay.
And all I ask my pug is if it has Buddha nature, and sometimes it says yes, and sometimes it says no.
Good dog.
But she's the most adorable creature, so.
She's not wrinkled?
No, she's very wrinkly, but I don't know how the Eightfold Path ended up.
Well, grab those wrinkles and look inside, you'll see.
Oh!
But I'll continue to consider that.
It makes me think of something to do with chemistry. And I don't know enough about chemistry to name two actual substances, but it makes me think of two substances that each one by itself maybe doesn't look like much. And maybe it looks even kind of dark or like it has nothing special about it, but if you put them together, pow, something happens.
Yeah. Yeah.
You talked about losing life and body and offering life and body. And there's dance there, and it also seems to be neither. It seems you don't lose it by offering it. And you can't offer what you've lost. But yet it seems very true. In relationship, in like that, like two things that are hydrogen and oxygen, and then you've got water, and nothing's lost and nothing's gained, and nothing's really offered, and nothing. But there we have this beautiful organic thing. It's interesting to try to think it through, and you can't get there.
Mm-mm.
But I love those two words in a way that really don't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
But I do want to say that last night at 11 o'clock in the alley, wardrobe up. It was Jared. How many Jareds could be there in the alley at 11 o'clock? And what a wonderful brightness in that dark. That's it.
Sarah, it seems to me that the brightness, okay, you said it's in relationship, and I think what you said is it's like it's activated by the relationship. It's there, but with our way of seeing and hearing and interpreting, we don't see it until we're in a relationship with it, and then it's activated like these chemical reactions.
Mm.
So, because I was thinking of the thoughts that go through my head,
right,
the negative memories that surface and things like that, and getting stuck in the weeds and the brambles.
Uh-huh.
But with that one memory that I had at this retreat, because of things that you said and that Andrew said, somehow it allowed me to see it from a different point of view, and that allowed it to dance its dance and to change. And now I'm not going to quite say it's like incandescent, but in a sense, I mean, I can see the activation, I can see the aliveness.
Yeah.
And that was something that I interpreted as very negative.
Uh-huh.
And now I can see the aliveness and an appreciation or a beauty, a type of beauty in it.
Yeah.
But the brightness was there. It was just covered up by my thoughts, mm-hmm, my beliefs, my holding things and not allowing them to move. Like not wanting to touch the memory or the experience, mm-hmm, not really wanting to go there, even though I thought I did, or I said I was willing and open. Mm-hmm. My fear was too great, mm-hmm, so it was like all balled up. And then you let that go, and then it's like kind of like the sun comes out.
Mm-hmm. 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 Thank you. And neither is wrong.
No, I that's one of the things of anything I'm getting at this retreat.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wasn't doing anything wrong. There wasn't anything wrong with the experience in the weeds and the brambles and even the suffering, that wasn't wrong either.
Right.
Uncomfortable, yes.
Yeah.
Probably no.
Yeah. Yeah, I was looking at something from Hockland today, and he was talking about post-satori practice. He was railing about people who have a satori, have a you know, awakening, enlightenment experience, and then think they're done, and how damaging they are, how much trouble they make, and he said, no, you have your experience and then you spend decades in the brambles with your koans trying to pick your way through the koan briar patch and the koans of your life, you know, that briar patch.
So is that a bright road for you now? I can see the aliveness in it. I can see the energy in it. And it's not eating at me anymore. It's more just like this. It's like there's not really words for it. Mm-hmm. It just feels mm-hmm. more like it doesn't solidify, and therefore I don't grab onto it and carry that memory to its previously predictable conclusion. It doesn't have that predictability about it now. Now it has more possibility.
Well, I think we need to wrap it up. Does anybody have one last thing they'd like to to say, well, thank you all for your patience and your ears and your practice.